Welcome to Enabling Digital, the Citizens Plus podcast series. Today, I'm happy to welcome Henrik Lund, a veteran in the transportation and logistics space and a true believer in technology and why digital transformation is the need of the hour in this space. Henrik, welcome. And if you don't mind, if you could take about 30 seconds for our listeners to give a little bit of your background, a brief introduction, if you will.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Safan. Thanks very much. And just a quick background introduction to myself. I'm based in Switzerland, first of all. I'm Danish of birth and upbringing, and I come from a background in the global freight forwarding and logistics industry over the past several decades, having worked sort of a third of my career in Europe, in the US, and in Asia, Hong Kong and Singapore. I worked for some very large, some of the largest organizations, and also some very large mid-sized organizations. So I've sort of been through, all the, let's say, the developments that has happened over the last 30 plus years in the industry. And of course, when I decided to join CloudX, that is about 3.5 years ago, it was with a heavy passion for, progressing the technology within the forwarding organization. So that's just a little bit background of myself. What would my role be in CloudX? So, I'm a partner, and primarily, my core, let's say, focus is really the commercial side of the business, really dealing and speaking with the customers, helping try to map out some of their needs, both on the technology side, coupling that with not only mine, but many of our colleagues in CloudX and of course System Plus Group, with our knowledge, deep knowledge in the industry.
That's fantastic. So actually, I want to dive right in. I have a lot of questions, right? But my first and most important question is, why do you feel that the transportation logistics space is well behind the curve when it comes to digital transformation compared to many other industries?
I think that, I know from experience, and I think it's pretty well known. I mean, you can just open the papers and all the media. I think the industry, if you go way back to the, the 90s even, have underinvested into technology. Mm-hmm. And many forwarders, if not all, back 20 plus years ago, many have had developed their own systems. Some of them had roots back to the 80s. I think the other thing that's important to understand also in general with the global logistics industry is it's a fairly low margin business when you look at the say the EBIT return. So you could argue, I mean, certainly somebody could defend themselves to say the money was simply not there. I still believe that it's a question of whatever money you have to invest forward, you take the right decisions and invest into the right type of technology. So I think the industry has just really been, behind for so many years. And I think it's really only over the last decade that that this has really come into high focus. I think many boardrooms have, many executive boards back years have not even had the CIO on the board. So I think there's been a realization over the last, I would say, at least 10 years, also with the emergence really of the cloud, that this has to be in high focus. And there's a lot of different reasons why it has to be in high focus.
So then let me ask you this, is that how do you feel cloud and cloud-based technologies are currently disrupting the traditional model?
Well, I think that, what we say to our customers is you don't just move to the cloud necessarily to save money. I think that the first phase of let's say creating a cloud strategy and start making a, let's say, a hybrid strategy and moving to the cloud, certain applications to the cloud, I think you should do it because, again, to answer your question, you can develop faster in the cloud, and you can create much more seamless solutions when you embark on your, let's say, your true digital transformation, and I think that's the key.
Okay. I agree, but now a board member or CEO might argue that, well, things are working. They're working fine.
Yeah.
You know, there's no major problems. We're getting whatever we need, etc. So why change? How do you list that?
I would do a little bit research and to this particular board. I would go out and benchmark a little bit against maybe four or five of their competitors. And I would, you know, try to do some very quick walkthrough of the, you know, top down on their P&L to show, you know, they probably have around the same gross margins. Mm-hmm. And then when you get down to operating expenses, I think that's really where the battle stands in terms of pure financial performance. So I think to a board like that, I would first of all say, I think you should understand a little bit better what digital transformation is and what the cloud is and offers, because a lot of them don't really have knowledge about it. Some might even shy away from it. And then I would argue that, you know, let's take three or four or five competitors that simply outperforming them on let's say converting GP to EBIT. So really operating more efficiently. And let's just use it as an example that, you know, the customer we're speaking to who has doubts, you know, they have an EBIT maybe of 2.5%, and some of their larger competitors maybe have an EBIT of 4.5%. You know, I think that would, you know, if I was on the board, that would worry me, and I would ask, why is that? And I think there you then have to try to help them to organize their priorities in terms of, you know, where is it that we can operate more efficiently and where can we take cost out?
I'm really glad you gave that answer, because honestly, most people who are technologists first think to convince on the technology, and you've taken an approach of helping them understand from a business aspect and how you can impact the GP versus the EBIT. And I think that's pretty important, because a lot of time what happens is technologists get lost in technology, and often even the business side gets lost in numbers. And that convergence is very important. And I think you bring that to the table.
Yeah. So I think, yes, that would be my answer. Thank you, Sapan, because I think, you know, and then maybe that's going a little bit off the question is also that, you know, there's a lot of articles out. McKinsey have written some really good ones, and Boston Consulting on, you know, is there enough knowledge in the boardroom and in particular, even in the executive boardroom? Is there enough knowledge and understanding, you know, the whys, right? You know, IT and technology shouldn't just be viewed as an expense in the budget. You have to look at, you know, if we follow this path that we're being recommended, what would the return be, right? And what are the timelines look like? So I think it's changing for sure. I mean, you know, many companies, I mean, many people ask me, say, what's the difference between a CIO and a CTO or a chief digital officer? And I think 10 years ago, people were rolling their eyes if there was this split, right? But I think, you know, the answer to me is a CIO is very much focusing on infrastructure, whereas a CDO or CTO is focusing on the future and on, let's say, on creating solutions from a technology standpoint in trying to create seamless solutions to their customers. One, better customer experience, and two, obviously being able to service the customer both more effectively and also at less cost.
No, fantastic. And so I'm sure you have seen enough companies in this space who have embraced technology, right? Yeah. What are the key differences? And now, and as you said, in the last 10 years, a lot of companies have started recognizing it. There are some new players who are more or less full tech-based platforms, et cetera, right?
Yep.
What are the big differences that you've seen over the traditional models that the older companies still use, right, or starting to change, versus these new tech-based, tech-savvy companies? What are the big differences that you're seeing, and therefore, what are the big wins do you see them getting in the industry?
You mean the, let's say, the you know, the digital forwarders or the virtual forwarders?
Yeah, I mean, that's an example. Or also there are companies Like, you know, even the freight forwarders who invest heavily into technology and have made simple things like the customer experience much better, and therefore customer acquisition becomes easier, versus, you know, things of that nature, whereas certain companies still focus on the paper and pen route, right?
So I think if you take the traditional forwarder and if you look at some of these organizations that, you know, already, you know, 10 or 12 or 15 years ago realized that, you know, they need to change, and they need, you know, it started with, you know, you had a quotation tool for the customer that they could, you know, request the price, multiple lanes, and they could get an immediate quote based on you know, the rate database that had been put together. And then you developed, let's say, the next step would then be the customer could actually book it sort of right away. They could accept the quotation and book it. And then, you know, it goes well beyond that. And I think, you know, there are a number of companies, in particular some of the big ones, that actually have been very successful already quite some time ago in developing, you know, front-end solutions to the customer that makes it easier to do business, that you know, captures potentially much more business and revenue, because, you know, the customer likes the fact that they don't need to pick up the phone or send an email. They can just go in and do a quick request, and then they can take a decision. I think the ones that, you know, were early movers to the cloud also, you know, obviously have a, let's say, an advantage because they've been developing in the cloud. I think first companies, and this is not that many years ago, 4 or 5 years ago, you know, speaking to customers who were fully on-prem with their own data centers in, you know, in multiple locations, you know, they were very skeptical about the cloud. What about security? We don't want our data sitting up in the cloud. We don't know where it sits. We don't know who can see it, right? So I think that, you know, obviously, I think, you know, to me in particular, AWS that we deal very, very much with, you know, I think that hurdle has been overcome, right? Because the amount of resources they have to invest, both in terms of, you know, skilled people and also finance investments, developing all these, you know, very stringent security protocols and all different types of let's say, safeguards, to an extent where you could argue a customer couldn't do that themselves, because they simply wouldn't have the resources and potentially not have the, let's say, the ongoing latest knowledge. So I think that's the first hurdle. And then I think it's to really understand what the cloud can do. And I think what we've done a lot is done, we call them strategic reviews, where we sit down with the customer and through a number of let's say focused workshops. It can be done in the room, it could be done on video conference, and try to understand the whole landscape and the whole ecosystem, and then help them really develop a strategy and a roadmap on how they should build the, let's say, how should they build the path going forward. How does the priorities look like? That's their decision, of course. We can help them with that, and how does it all sort of dovetail together in parallel when you start developing. And I think that's where the advantage in the cloud is, clearly, that in particular if you go cloud native, that you can develop a lot faster based on constant latest technology as opposed to old technology.
Right. So I want to, you know, while you're doing these workshops, for example, as you mentioned, do you often get into the discussions about the customer's customer? So, you know, in a sense, if you can convince your customer that their customer is going to have a much better experience by placing an order, you know, as you alluded to, now I can just go online and track my, whether there's an order or shipment or payment or whatever the customer may be, simple things like that, right? How do you tie that in? Because in the end, you know, it's really customer is king, right? So how do you sort of how do you convince them?
Yeah, no, it's a great question, Sapan, because this is very important. I mean, because you have to have, let's say, the end in mind, right? And I think our customer is the forwarder, their customer is an exporter, an importer, and you could even take it one step further, which I think is important, because, you know, the customer has a customer. And what is the impact all the way along, you know, the supply chain, so to speak, right, to the end buyer? I mean, the person who buys a new suit or a new shirt or a new TV or whatever it may be on iPhone, you know, that has to be visible to the customer. And I think it also, I mean, it goes back to talking a little bit about the boardroom. It's easier to tool up, the CIO or, the CDO. It's easier to tool them up to present their case for budget and investment when it's more clear on what is the impact and what is the, they would ask, what's the return? What's in it for us? Mm-hmm. It always becomes difficult to sort of quantify customer experience, right? But you know, a happy customer versus a not so happy customer should have a positive effect over time, for sure. I think that's one of the things that we do, and as a starting point, and that generally, it always seems to be quite successful. Customers are happy with the output, and it generally leads into identifying one or two projects that we then engage with them on to really help them and also provide support, resources, development capabilities, and so on.
Right. So one thing I've noticed in this specific industry space is that, and while I acknowledge that domain knowledge or industry experience is extremely important in when they're embarking on some kind of a digital transformation journey with any customer. But yeah. I feel that in this space, it's even more important because a lot of the stuff happens behind the scenes. It's stuff that you don't see. And therefore, you know, it's not something that's so easy to recognize. For example, right, if I'm working with a retailer, I can imagine how my cloth gets to the, you know, to the tailor, and from tailor sends it to this thing, and then eventually how it comes to me or how I order it. I can imagine that because I wear something like that every day. Yeah. On the trade side, all that stuff is the stuff that happens behind the scenes. I don't see it. I don't, whatever. Once in a while, I may see a big ship, whatever. And that's it, right? So, it doesn't seem as intuitive. So I presume that in this area, I presume that the industry experience in this area is probably extremely important. I don't want to downplay any other industry, but here, I think it probably becomes a little bit of like table stakes, don't you think?
Yeah, well, I if I understand the question correctly, I think the fact that we do differentiate ourselves, I think, quite a fair bit from other companies, other technology consultants, and so on, where we have a very strong background from the supply chain industry, having many of us worked for many years for very large organizations in the logistics space. Mm-hmm. Around the world. So we have a very deep knowledge in how the supply chain actually operates and how it functions. We also understand all the constraints. We understand all the different challenges and the bottlenecks and so on, which allows us to understand the customer's business in general much better. We don't just approach it from a pure technology perspective, right? We understand that they're dealing with a global, they deal with a global flow of goods, basically from cradle to grave, right? They're dealing with regulations. They're dealing with multiple vendors, of course, shipping lines, airlines, road feeder services, warehouses, cross docks. The list goes on. They're dealing with different customs regulations. So all these things make a business shipping from A to B that seems quite simple. Actually, it makes it quite complex. And it also makes it very labor intense. And this goes back to what I said earlier about, in a brutal way, say, taking cost out. The last way a company generally would like to take cost out is just to let go of people, right? Sometimes, unfortunately, they have to, but rather looking at how can we take cost out and actually embracing and using the technology and the different tools that are available in the cloud. And I think those who are embracing that and those who are really investing into that will be definitely ahead of the game as the years progress, years to come. And it shows. I mean, you could see they grow faster and you can see their financial performance is better. because a traditional global network forwarder still is very labor intensive. There's a lot of manual processes. There's a lot of data entry happening, and there's a lot of there's a lot. I mean, in a sense, there's also a lot of waste, right? Because you know, you can't have a staff, at least I don't think so, that can sit for, let's say, 7 or 8 hours a day and just be fully productive, you know, doing data entry. I mean, there's a limit to, I think even from a human perspective, how much people can take, right?
Absolutely. So you alluded to the future. So let me ask you about the future. Are you seeing certain trends in the industry and how technology can help sort of, achieve the goals that companies might have, et cetera? And what are you seeing in terms of the future of technology in this space?
We see a lot of things. I think, first of all, this is very specific, but it's at the core of how a free forwarder actually transacts their business. And again, like I mentioned earlier, the transport management system, TMS, which is sort of an ERP, freight forwarders had, many of them developed their own. There were some systems available in the market. Many have tried to develop themselves again about 10 years ago. There's a very large German-based forwarder that had to abandon that project, which was quite a big write-off. But the emergence of WiseTech and CargoWise One, which is a listed company in Australia, which has been around for over 30 years. So WiseTech and their CargoWise One TMS and the whole platform, they've really developed over the past, many years, but sort of, in my view, accelerated their onboarding of new customers about, you know, a good 10 years ago. And today really is quite dominant in the industry. They're not the only ones. There are other ones in the US, Canada, and there are some in Europe and elsewhere. But I think the fact that I think a lot of forwarders have moved on to, you know, a single TMS platform. And it's not just, of course, this particular company I mentioned, but they're starting to look at saying, it's almost like in the old days when you bought an IBM or Lenovo and said Intel inside. It's almost to say, look, let's just get that very, very proven, robust core operating system rolled out, and let's do it as fast as we can, and let's start building around it. First of all, these systems are developing and expanding in their capabilities themselves, and then you can start really building around it all the different, let's say, solutions that you want to sort of plug in and bolt on, and that's been the trend. We actually were the first, about 2.5 years ago, who actually did a POC for an existing customer, proving that one of these TMS systems, which they had intended to host themselves, could actually operate more efficiently in the cloud, and it was very successful. And this system, pardon?
I said, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is. And again, because, on-prem versus cloud, I mean, should it be 100% on-prem? Should it be 100% cloud? You know, there's always a hybrid solution where you still can operate some maybe very critical applications that you feel you want to have in a number of own data centers. And then you have a hybrid with the cloud. And I think, you know, it also, I mean, it really, you know, if we talk about challenges for companies facing when transitioning to the cloud, I think one is actually knowledge, because certainly many customers we've spoken to who are in the early stages of exploring, you know, what they can do in terms of, really on a transition to the cloud. I mean, they lack the internal knowledge in their people. And this is also something we've been helping with a lot and ongoing, where we actually provide support and advice and even people coming in to, let's say, for a period of 6, 9, or 12 months or even beyond that, really, you know, helping, you know, build the knowledge within the customer's own teams.
Absolutely. So before we sort of wrap up, I actually am want to ask you this question. I'm actually very keen to get your perspective. Is that what advice, right, would you give to global logistics companies, even, you know, smaller logistics companies, et cetera, who are looking to embark on their digital transformation journey, you know, what advice would you give in terms of how should they think about it, what approach they should take, et cetera? And I know you touched on this, you know, throughout our conversation in different ways, but in a sense, if somebody's going to say, okay, I know I need to get there, right? I need help. So, you know,
I think
you summarize, you know, in your own words, what advice would you give them?
I think first I would tell them, find the right partner. And I obviously would like to say that I think they should choose us. And if you then ask me why, so we are not the biggest in the world, but we have significant resources in our company to scale up and support. And we have a significant deep knowledge ongoing in terms of accredited and certified people, in terms of cloud, you know, it keeps expanding, and it's something we're very religious about, that our people are really, really up to date with the latest knowledge and so on. I think we're very agile, and now I'm obviously selling us, but nevertheless, but really find the right partner. And I think they think they should also bury, I wouldn't say bury their pride, but don't be defensive, you know, share and open up so that we can get, you know, a better view on where we think you need to, which buttons do you need to push, you know, can we help you with your prioritization? And I think also companies should be honest and assess their internal resources to understand if there are people who needs to actually go and get trained, or they need to get help, or we need to hire, you know, some key people in. I think it's really about, you know, trying to say the way we've done things the last, you know, 20 years, that might not be the way we should do it the next 20 years or even the next 3 years, right? And that I can tell you, Sapan, I mean that is a big that's a big thing that needs to be looked at. I've also seen customers where you might need to make some changes to get things actually moving in the right direction, right? So, but I think find the right partner. That's the short answer. And the right partner is not necessarily the biggest company out there. I think the right partner is somebody who really also fits with the culture and also has the knowledge. And it goes back to what I've said several times, that we understand the business. We have managed in different aspects of the business, me more on the operational and the product and the sales and key account management sides at scale, and others in the company like Niklas Palmqvist, our CEO and co-founder, right, has 25 years experience from the transportation industry, having built some very, very large ERP systems and really led the way in many forward-looking solutions.
Oh, that's fantastic. Henrik, I want to thank you so much for your time. And I want to thank our listeners. And do tune in next time for another session of Enabling Digital with Systems Plus podcast series. And with that, signing off. Thank you again.
Yeah, thanks very much.